presentation materials and turn things over to your first speaker, Laura Coughlin. Laura, whenever you're ready, please begin.
Hello, everyone. As Jean said, today's webinar is only 30 minutes long, and it is completely focused on current hazardous waste exporters on how to transition to electronic filing at the border. We currently have about 6 exporters, and this is the transition period, so this webinar is to help you prepare and start that transition to the electronic process. If you go to slide 2, right now in the regulations, we are in the transition period, and it started on December 31st when the revisions became effective. And exporters are allowed to choose in, you know, as per 40 CFR 26283A6, whether they follow the old paper process where you have to have documentation of your consent with the shipment along with the RCRA manifest and the movement document, and you have to provide an additional copy of the RCRA manifest for the transporter so that he or she can give a signed copy of that to the customs officer at the port of exit prior to departure. The new electronic process, instead of turning over a paper copy of the RCRA manifest, the exporter or his or her authorized agent files RCRA-related information as part of the electronic export information that you file in the automated export system. And that's in addition to all the other information that you're required to send under 15 CFR 30.6. The reason we say, along with all the other information, is that your consent is the equivalent of an export license under 15 CFR 30.1. So right now you are required to be filing EEIs for every shipment regardless of you and regardless of the destination country. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Roy Shea.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Actually, I'm going to step back because I think there's one key point on your slide that I want to point out to people. If you look at this underlined statement at the very bottom on the right-hand side, regardless of shipment value or destination country, those are really important because I know for some exporters, for certain low-value shipments or certain countries, there are certain exemptions where someone does not need to file EEI information for that shipment. That is not the case for hazardous waste. So no matter how cheap it is or what country it's going to, you really need to file that export information.
And by the way, just to break in, Roy, that's
yes.
Thing with a RCRA consent. If you've gotten an AOC, if you are required to have an acknowledgement of consent letter from EPA, you have to file EEIs. So that's manifested RCRA hazardous waste, spent lead acid batteries, universal waste shipments, and conditionally excluded CRTs going for recycling. I just wanted
right.
to add.
That's good. And just to point out sort of the difference between the paper and the electronic process. So the paper process was a piece of paper that accompanied the shipment, and customs would look at that along with the other paper information that was provided. But the new process, what happens, and Beth is going to explain this later about what you file, but essentially the automated export system does an automatic review of that, and it actually checks it. And if you filed everything correctly, you get issued a tracking number for the goods to leave the country. So it really is a quick way for you to file and get your export approved to leave the U.S. All right, so I'm going to provide a little bit of background just to orient folks, and then I'm going to turn it over to Beth to talk about what's involved and to elaborate a little bit more. But these filings have been going on actually for 2.5 years. And there's been over 40,000 filings to date, as Laura said, from about six exporters. And what we found is that a lot of these exporters are using brokers to do a lot of their filing. But there has been, I guess, one to date that's used what's called AES Direct, which is a portal that Customs provides for doing their export filings. So it has been used for quite a while. It's been used by those that do EEI filings using automated broker interface software, as well as a few that are decided to use the ACE portal. So during this transition period until the end of December 31st, 2017, there's a variety of ways that you can file these filings. So you've gotten your acknowledgement of consent letter from Customs with your consent number on it, and so how are you going to file that and the handful of data elements that Beth's going to go over the next slide? Well, you may choose, because you're not ready yet, to file it strictly on paper and just follow the old process. The other one is you do some testing and get up to speed and then do it using the electronic process. And as, again, you know, those 40,000 that are being filed are being done now through that electronic process. Or if you're not quite comfortable, you and your transporter are not quite comfortable, you can basically do both. So you could file the electronic filing process and still have the paper that accompanies the shipment. So as you can see above, we've actually seen an increase from the early days of about 250 filings a month, but now it's holding pretty steady, about 1,800 a month. And so, you know, granted, these six exporters are fairly large exporters that are moving hundreds of shipments a week. But what we would recommend is if you haven't started filing yet and you're interested in filing, I would ask actually that and Gene, you can help me out here, that in the window where they can ask questions, if they would provide their name and email address and if they're interested in filing sooner versus later, to sort of pass that information on to us so that we can look at getting you ready to file. So again, you guys need to be filing all electronic by the end of this year. And so before you file, you really need to test, because if you aren't able to file successfully, your goods really are not going to be allowed to leave the country. So again, the message is file, test now, and file before the end of the deadline. All right, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Beth to talk about, well, what is it you need to file.
Hi, my name is Beth Reichle. I'm going to talk a little bit about what you need to file and the different ways you can file it. There are five pieces of data that are going to be filed in the EPA hazardous waste record. Two of them are mandatory. The other three are conditionally required. If you are filing for EPA hazardous waste export, you are always going to file the EPA license required indicator and the EPA consent number. You may be conditionally required to file the RCRA hazardous waste manifest tracking number, the EPA net quantity unit of measure, and the EPA net quantity. So let's go through these sort of one by one. The license required indicator is pretty obvious. If you place a Y, you're indicating that you have an EPA consent number that you are filing. Your EPA consent number is going to need to be formatted correctly for AES, and it should include the waste stream number. So what you want to do is take a look at the slide here and the way we've converted the consent number plus the waste stream number. So here your waste stream number is 001. We're having you remove the special characters and the 12, the number from the middle combination, to give you a six numeric one alpha and then five numeric waste stream number plus consent number format. So this is the number that you would need to provide in the record for the consent number, and this is what we're validating against. So this is going to be key. This is the piece of information you would have previously gotten from your acknowledgement of consent, and that we're going to be checking against the current valid consent numbers. The remaining three items are conditionally required. So the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest Tracking Number is associated with the export, and it's conditionally required if the waste is required to be RCRA manifested. So if you are required to have this number, and should be well aware of that, then it needs to be provided in the filing. The last two EPA net quantity of measure and EPA net quantity are going to be conditionally required based on which Schedule B HTS code you have selected and whether or not the required CVP unit of measure for that HTS code are going to be appropriate for EPA. If the waste is solid and one of your unit of measures and quantity provided to CBP is kilograms, or if it's liquid and one of the unit of measures provided to CBP is liters, then you should be good. However, if you are aware that neither of these are the case and you are not providing that unit of measure to us that we need, then you will need to provide this additional quantity and unit of measure in the record for EPA.
Beth, this is Laura. One slight tweak to that. The only time you're going to be conditionally required to do the EPA net quantity is when it is not in a units of weight or volume. The specific units don't have to be kilograms or liters that are specified for that commodity code, but they have to be weight or volume, and volume if it's a liquid and weight if it's a solid. The one example of where that's not the case, because there's an AUQ1 and an AUQ2. If both of those are not in weight or volume, such as with cathode ray tubes being exported for recycling, in that case, the commodity codes that you can potentially use for the various cathode ray tube designations specify that you report the number of items, the number of cathode ray tube units that you have in your shipment. That's not weight and it's not volume. In that case, you would be required to do the net quantity and report in kilograms because CRTs are solid. Sorry, back to you, Beth.
Thanks, Laura. So for additional information, we're going to go through sort of the different file formats, but we do direct everyone to the STEER if you need additional information on the fields after this presentation. Now I'm going to go on to the field layout for the EDI format. So basically, this is showing you how you take those five elements, should you need to provide all five of them, and enter them in the PGA record, basically the EP1 is the government agency code for EPA. So that is your first sort of indicator on the PGA line in case you have multiple PGA lines. You'll want to know which one is us. And the Y is the license required indicator. And again, that means that you definitely have an EPA consent number and that you're providing that along with this format, including the waste stream number, next. Immediately following that is the RCRA Hazardous Waste Manifest Tracking Number. And then the next order is the EPA net quantity, unit of measure, and the EPA net quantity. And there are zero fills here for the EPA net quantity. So they are front zero fills. The X12 format is the similar. You follow the same format. EP1 is again your government agency code for EPA, and then you are followed all in one field here with the license required indicator, our consent number, the RCRA hazardous waste manifest tracking number, unit of measure, and quantity. So those are very straightforward, one record which may have either two pieces of EPA data elements or up to five depending on the type of shipment. No, this is a little hard to read. This is the AES direct screen if you are filing the AES. Your commodity line details will have an option to provide partner government agency data. So if you look at the very bottom of the screen, what is critical here in order to get to the EPA screen to enter the export hazardous waste export information, you need to select yes on this screen that you have partner government agency data. When you do that and complete the rest of the screen for the line details, you will see an EPA license data screen input. So you select from the menu on the left, EPA, and then you will have fields indicating where you would put your EPA consent, your RCRA tracking number, your net quantity, and your unit of measure. I want to sort of be very clear here. The formatting is the same in AES Direct as it is in EDI and X12, so you still need to do any data transformation with your consent number. You still need to zero fill the net quantity if it is less than the number of digits. So please make sure that you note those items as you complete AES Direct. I think that's the one thing that it's not abundantly clear from the screen itself. And the question here is EPA data being required. Yes, that is simply the why that we saw elsewhere, the EPA data required indicator. So that is AES Direct. And Roy, I'm going to turn it back to you.
All right. So I just want to stress the point here that really there's sort of a key role for each of the parties here. So you just saw the screens for the electronic data interchange submission, and those are typically used by brokers who are doing filers for exporters, and they really rely on the software vendor to make sure that that software has been built correctly and that they're also getting the right information from the exporter. They're getting that valid consent number and RCRA manifest number and the other quantities that were mentioned as well. So really working together, you know, each of the parties really it's key when it's being done by a broker using information from the exporter and a software vendor. For those of you that are self-filers that are using that AES Direct portal, then you're not working so much with the broker, but you guys are going to be using the software that Customs has. So the key point there is to make sure that you can work with Customs and make sure you know how to use that software correctly. So I think that concludes our presentation. It looks like, Gene, I'm going to turn it over to you, but we've got about 7 minutes for questions.
Yeah. Okay, just a quick reminder before Laura starts jumping in. If you have questions or comments, you can still type them into the Q&A window in the middle or lower right corner of your screen. I do see a few that have come in, so please take advantage of the time. Go ahead and type them into that window. And Roy, I believe you had asked the audience earlier to share information as well. So just in case someone missed that, Roy, what were you looking for them to type in as well?
I would just say send us your name and email address if you want to get started.
Okay. Okay. And so, Laura, feel free to start looking through those questions.
Yeah, we have a number from Mahir. Thank you, Mahir. I'm going to start with the first one, which is once we file the AES filing, do we still need to stop at the border crossing, or can our shipments directly proceed? In our case, we ship waste to Canada via truck. Roy, help me out with this. On the U.S.-Mexico border, I don't believe there's a big stop. What the CBP officers are doing at this point would be checking your ITN number. That's your tracking number. It signifies that you've had a successful filing in AES. So it's a much quicker check if there's a check at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it varies by port of exit or not, but in theory, they should not be stopping a truck shipment to look for paper. They're simply checking with the carrier like they typically do for exports, and then they also would just check to make sure that an ITN is issued for that particular shipment.
Mihir also said he's got an exporter account in the ACE portal, so he is able to get to the AES filing section in ACE, which is great. But he asked, is there a limit as to how many filings can be done through the ACE portal?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Certainly, you can add as many commodity lines. It was one of the slides that Beth went over, talked about. You just keep adding lines or adding commodities. Here it is. Multiple commodity lines by selecting add line.
There actually might be a limit. I know for imports there's a limit of 999 lines. So I would just urge you to check with Customs directly on that, on the EEI filings, to see what is the total limit for any one filing. But for recurring filings, I don't think there's a limit of how many you can do.
Mihir asked, do we have to use Schedule B, or can we use the regular U.S. Harmonized Trade System codes? I'm not sure the answer on that one.
Well, I'll show my ignorance here, but we're basically using those terms interchangeably.
Yeah.
So what's happened is we flagged a number of the HTS codes / Schedule B codes for hazardous waste exports. And so there should be a message when you file or try to export that if you haven't done an AES filing for hazardous waste, you will be the port officers are notified, and you should be notified as well.
And he asked, what is the export information code in the previous AES direct screen?
So this is Beth. So outside of AES Direct, what it's being translated from is in the CL1 record. There's a mandatory data element called additional PGA data required, and that mandatory data element is what is being seen on the line detail screen here with the radial button for yes or no.
But I think he's asking about the export information code that's above that. It's like the top field right under the line details heading.
That is not relevant to the PGAs, so.
Yeah.
That might be a customs requirement. So, again, I'd urge you to check with your customs folks on that one.
All right. Henry, thank you for sending in your email. We will contact you. Carlo Rodriguez, regulation states that a copy of the hazardous waste manifest should be given to CBP at the port of exit. Does this AES filing comply with this requirement? If you will look at the revised regulations that became effective on December 31st, what it says is that prior to the AES compliance date, you can follow the paper process or the electronic process. And if you choose to follow the paper process, you have to instruct your transporter in writing to give an extra copy of the manifest, that signed copy, to the port officer. If you instruct your transporter that you are following the electronic process, then you enter your manifest tracking number. In AES Direct, it's the RCRA tracking number. But that's what it means. It means your RCRA manifest tracking number at the top right-hand corner of your manifest. You enter that, you enter your consent number, and that meets that requirement. We modified it in Part 2, we made conforming changes to Part 263. So if you have more questions about that, you can email me at coughlin.laura@epa.gov. I'm not seeing any additional questions. We have a few more minutes if somebody has a question.
Yeah, I actually have a hard stop at 2:30, so I'm going to be hopping off.
Okay. Nobody appears to be typing, so I think we should turn it back over to you, Jean, to wrap this up.
All right. Thank you so very much. Let me walk through just a few final reminders before we go ahead and close out today's live broadcast. As we mentioned earlier today, if you would like to access a copy of the materials as well as some related resources, you'll find those on the webinar homepage. You'll also see those things linked on the middle right of the screen under related URLs. You can click on or scroll through that list of links, click on a link to select it, and then press the Browse To button to open them up on your own web browser. If you're looking for contact information for today's presenters and organizers, you'll also find that on the seminar homepage. So if you have follow-on questions, you can reach out there. As noted, I would ask if you could fill out just a short online feedback form and let us know what you thought about today's delivery. You'll see a link to that on the middle right of your screen. If you happen to participate in a group, each person at your location can fill out their own version of the online feedback form. For those of you looking for copies of a participation certificate, I just wanted to remind you that you can get one of those after you fill out the feedback form. There's a box at the bottom of that form. Once you click on the box to indicate that you were here for the entire session or replayed the whole thing, and you fill out and submit that feedback form, a PDF certificate will be immediately available to either fill out to print out or to download and save for your own records. If you happen to be one of the lucky ones who are replaying the recorded version of today's webinar, you can still follow the link and share feedback based off of that form and get one of those participation certificates after you replay the entire broadcast. And so as noted, today's session was recorded, and we'll be sending out an email with instructions on how to play today's seminar back on demand as soon as it's available. I want to thank everyone who joined us for today's live broadcast. We had about 36 individuals from all over the U.S. check in for today's broadcast, and I want to thank our organizers who took time out to join us for today's session. This will be the formal conclusion.